A caller says, is the Law Society of Ireland a good enough reference for you? This was all over the media for 5 minutes at the time, so have a wee read so you can be sure. I'm not being ignorant. I'll have to just double check what that is relating to. But anyway, okay, I'll check into it. No problem. Every day is a learning day. And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's a funny old day today. Is it like that for you out there? Little things are happening or not happening. It's hard to describe, but it's like there's a full moon or something. Have you spotted anything like that today in your life, that things just aren't working out like they normally do? Not in any serious way or whatever, but it's just kind of funny. It's been one of those mornings. Let's put it to you like that. If you're having one of those mornings, tell us why. Let's get the groupthink going. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number for you. Give us a call if you wish on 07491 25000. We have Community Guard information coming up for you in the not too distant future. But just a few things I want to mention. A black pony is wandering in the Tully Vinny area of Raphoe. The listener put him into a field near Smiley's Bray. So he's or she has put the pony into that field. May not be the field from which it came, but it's off the road and in a safe place. So if you're missing a black pony, it would have been wandering around the Tully Vinny area of Raphoe. Well, a kind listener has put him in a field near Smiley's Bray just for his safety and for motorists' safety. A caller says that pornography is being shown to children in school by way of sex education and the materials used. I'm not sure if you've seen the stuff that's in the curriculum. I know where you're coming from, or versus what we're talking about. While I was talking to Senator Mullen there, there's quite a difference, but I take your point. A caller says that Highland Radio should not be discussing inappropriate websites during the day on the summer holidays when parents are in the car with children who can hear the conversation. It's an absolute disgrace. My apologies, but we didn't say anything particularly graphic, I don't think. And us not talking about it maybe isn't working very well as a society. But I take your point. My apologies for any offence. And maybe with a conversation like that there, I should have put on a health warning, I'll think on for the future. Right, let's talk about the diamond in Donegal Town. As you would know, it's been done up. It looks great. But also, as you would know, and perhaps the timing wasn't a coincidence, Donegal County Council issued a reminder that the diamond is not for parking vehicles of any nature. This was ahead of a big charity run. A number of bikes parked on the diamond in any case didn't cause any obstructions from what I could see. And there is a tradition at the weekends where bikers travelling to or through Donegal Town stop off, grab a coffee, grab a bagel or whatever it might be. And the council have said, we don't want bikes on the diamond. It's for pedestrians only. So let's see what Billy thinks. Hi, Billy. Good morning to you.
How are you, Greg?
I'm doing fantastic. Any news? What's the story? How's Donegal Town getting on?
It's very busy, you know. It is busy.
Good
and
stuff.
The diamond is fantastic job. I like it the way it is. Mm. But they're a wild asset to Donegal, the bikers. They raise a lot of money for charity. And they're a big attraction for tourists too as well. It's terrible that they're not being let on because they're good people. And these people are all, they're not fighting or drinking or stealing or anything. They're very good people and it's a disgrace that they're being hounded out of it.
Yeah, like I said in the show yesterday, Billy, we're not talking the Hells Angels here or what people might have a perception
not
of a group of
all,
bikers. These
all,
are
no.
Often more mature people. Many of the rides they undertake for charity. They're,
that's right.
And they're very careful not to obstruct people. I've seen that myself in how they park their vehicles.
They're fantastic. And even the kids, the tourists that be in there, they get up on the bikes to get their photograph and I've been there a lot, and I know it's fantastic. It was a great attraction. And to think that they're going to be put off is annoying for me.
Do you see any logic? Do you see any logic to it, though, Billy? I think really maybe the council want this to be a space where people can... There's full access for people in wheelchairs, those with a buggy, maybe visually impaired, that people can sit around and just chill, have a coffee, and that maybe they see the bikes as an inconvenience, maybe noise disruption or blocking access. I'm only trying to play devil's advocate here, Billy.
Yes. The bikers are fantastic. They have manners. And they run a good show. Honestly, they're they raised about 10,000 there for the Galway Cancer Bus. Mm. They're fantastic people. I wouldn't like to see them go now because they're a great asset. And anyway, the diamond is a community project. And it should be there for everybody. If you look out over in Britain's insurance office, there's a big photograph on the wall, about 6 foot square, and it's the Diamond in Donegal, and there's about maybe 50 carts and horses on it, with all types of produce. Some of my own family, probably way back in the olden days, and that's what it was intended for.
Yeah, a community space.
That's right.
Yeah,
and I'd be on it an odd time, only maybe two or three times a year on a Saturday selling tickets. It's a fantastic place with wonderful people calling to it. The tourists are great.
This is the second thing relating to Donegal Town, that something has been introduced or something's being done to fix a problem that I don't actually see exists, if you know what I mean. We seem to be trying to fix things that aren't problems and leaving the problems to be.
Exactly. And you know, Greg, they spent millions on the dime, which I don't mind. That's fair enough. But we have practically no toilets. They're a disgrace. And that's what the tourists used to say to me. I was 12 years on that water bus.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to say, it's terrible, there are no toilets. Well, there is toilets, but they're not fit for purpose. You know, they're terrible condition.
That's in the car park there beside the...
That's right.
I wouldn't go in there now. I'd probably hold on to it as long as I can before I went into them, if the truth be told.
Everybody's the same.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a coach driver there, down the pier one day, and he was telling me he was over in Edinburgh with a tour.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was a credit to them, the toilets. There were shower facilities for the drivers. It was a credit. No hotel would have as good a toilet. There was a man full-time in it.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, they could do that in Donegal.
I do wonder sometimes, though, if private businesses, and we probably both know the type the businesses we're talking about, if private businesses are really being relied on to provide those toilet services.
That's for sure. Mm. The Abbey Hotel would be one
that's
of them.
That's it, yeah. I think that's the number one.
And the business and in Donegal two. Are all want the bikers. They want the bikers. They
right.
want the bikers.
Well, hopefully that is okay. All I've heard, Billy. That's all I've heard. Everyone seems
all
to be on the same
hinge. I'll talk to you later.
All right, Billy. Good luck to you. All right. Okay. That's a typical Irish goodbye. I'll not hold you up any longer now. All right. Thanks, Billy. I do appreciate that.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 9126025.
Okie doke, it's Tuesday, the 9th of July, 2024. Time for Community Garda information, and in studio with me is Garda, Sean Swinney from the Buncrana Garda Station. Sean, thank you very much for your time.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
How are you keeping?
Good, yeah.
Good stuff. I appreciate you making the journey down. Right, let's get straight into it. A number of appeals here. Let's start with a burglary in Donegal Town.
Yeah, it's occurred in the area of Dromina and Donegal Town between midday on Monday the 24th of June and 5 p.m. on Monday the 1st of July. Entries gained to a vacant farmhouse after a downstairs window was smashed, interiors ransacked, and a bronze horse and cart ornaments stolen, as were a few bottles of alcohol. Whether or not anything else was stolen is yet to be determined. The outhouses were also entered after the padlocks on the locks were broken, and they were also ransacked. So we're appealing to anybody who may have observed suspicious activity in that area over the course of that week to make contact with Gardaí. And if anybody has any relevant information, please pass it to Ballyshannon Garda Station on 071-9858-530. Also, the Garda Confidential Line, 1800-666-111.
Yeah, sounds like they would have had to have been on site for quite some time at least,
right.
and quite unusual items to keep an eye out for as well. Right, okay. Now, investigations ongoing into a collision on Letterkenny's Main Street.
Yeah, this occurred in early hours of Sunday, the 7th of July, between a pedestrian and a motorist, and occurred at 1:30 a.m. All parties are spoken to by Gardaí at the scene. The pedestrian involved received medical attention for non-life-threatening injuries. So we're appealing to anybody who may have witnessed the collision or have captured it on dash cam footage to make contact with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167100.
Now, a theft on Maharoti Pier, or at Maharoti Pier next?
Yeah, this appeal is in relation to the theft of a 14-foot blue and white caravan. As I said, was stolen in Maharoti Pier between 4 p.m. on Sunday the 23rd of June and 9 a.m. on Monday the 24th of June. The caravan contained 14 surfboards, 2 wetsuits and 10 bodyboards. was later located burnt out in a field in Arsbeg in Gortahork. So we're appealing for any relevant information. Please contact Milford Garda Station on 91 530 60 or the confidential line, again, 1800 666 111.
Yeah, and someone's bound to have seen something here. Obviously, going missing from Maharoti, but then for it to be located at Ardsbeg and set a fire, and it's a horrible crime, that they all are, but that one in particular, robbing people of their goods in that way. Criminal damage next in Remelton.
Yeah, it's occurred at Castle Street in Remelton in the early hours of Saturday, the 6th of July. It's between 2 a.m. and 2:15 a.m. A man caused damage to the door of a business premises by kicking it between those times. So we're appealing to anybody who may have been in the area with dash cam footage to make it available. The festival is on at present, Remelton, so we're hopeful that maybe a taxi driver or somebody may have footage in the area. Or if anybody witnessed the incident, please contact Gardaí in Milford on, again, 91 530 60.
Criminal damage being investigated in Dromore as well. Or if I skipped one, sorry, we'll go to Cairn Donna next. Sorry, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, no problem. Cairn Donna. Yeah, criminal damage incident occurred at Baskill and Glenealy in the early hours of Sunday, the 7th of July, at approximately 12:30 in the morning. The bedroom window of a house in that area was smashed that time. A car left the area immediately after the incident occurred. So we're appealing to anybody who may have been in the area and has dashcam footage early that morning to make contact with us. Or if anybody has any relevant information, please contact Gardaí Macrana on 932-0540.
All right, and Dromore Park next.
Yeah, criminal damage incident, Dromore Park, Killygordon, between 10 a.m. on Monday the 24th of June and 1 p.m. On Tuesday the 2nd of July. So a car was parked at the estate, had quite substantial damage caused between those dates. It'll be keyed along both sides and to the rear. So we're asking if anybody can assist, please provide information to Letterkenny Gardaí on 91 67 100.
Right, okay. We've talked an awful lot about the importance of marking your property, and there are upcoming property marking events to allow people to do so.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. So Gardaí will be operating the property marking machine at Harold's Yard, Glenfinn Road, Balvafay. This is on Tuesday, the 16th of July, between 4:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Also be marking property at Homeland Lifford on Wednesday, July 17th, between 10 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. It's a good opportunity to permanently mark your traders, tools, your bike, anything you have with your air code. Machine can be used on a number of surfaces, including metal, carbon fibre, wood and plastic. And use a pattern of dots to mark the property. This makes it highly distinguishable and easy to return in case of theft, rendering it unattractive to thieves. So if you want to come along and get it marked, please have your air code with you.
Yeah, for sure. And as you say, it's about getting the property back to people. I'm thinking boat exactly. engines as well. We do see a spike in that type of theft. And it can be hard to get them back to their rightful owners, I would say, unless they've got the serial numbers or and all that kind of stuff. All right, okay. Right, now just a couple of questions that came in. Someone sent in a question last week in relation to lotteries and raffles. And we want to ask that person to please... This is something... Yes, I beg your pardon. Yeah. This is information you want to put out there.
So look, it's in relation to lotteries and raffles. So the person that submitted the question last week, we're asking please resubmit it. The question wasn't very clear and we want to try and answer for
I
them.
Get you. That makes sense. Okay. Right, a caller did ask last week about road traffic collisions and what type of collisions do Gardaí perform drug alcohol testing?
Yeah. So since Friday the 31st of May of this year, 2024, it's now mandatory for members of Gardaí to attend, when they attend the scene of a traffic collision where injuries have occurred, to test all drivers involved for the presence of alcohol or drugs. We wouldn't normally ordinarily test for alcohol and drugs at a material damage where there's no injuries. But if they do suspect an offence has occurred, or if they form an opinion that one or both drivers are under the influence, we would test then in those circumstances.
So, Gardaí, in a material damage collision, have the latitude, if there is a suspicion, to test one driver and not the other?
Exactly, yeah.
And when we talk about an injuries collision, would that be I've hurt my neck but I don't need to go to hospital, or would it be probably...
any injuries, if somebody's reporting that they are injured in some way, then okay. We're obligated then to
then it's compulsory.
Yes.
Okay, right. That's it, isn't it? That's the only question of today. All right, that clarifies that. Thanks very much. Sean, fair play to you. Thank you for calling, Dan.
No problem, Greg.
All right, take care. That is Sean Sweeney from the Buncrana Garda Station, and that was Community Garda Information for this Tuesday, the 9th of July. You can listen back to it on our podcast, watch it back on our Facebook and the Garda Facebook pages later, and it's back live for you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. By the way, actually, the Rory Gallagher International Festival was on down in Ballyshannon. Would it have been last month at this stage? He is from Ballyshannon, from Cork as well. But there's an interesting item of his up for sale. I wonder, will anyone local buy it? Rory Gallagher's battered guitar could be set to fetch more than €1 million when it goes to auction this autumn. The 1961 Fender Stratocaster could earn between £700,000 and £1 million. £700,000 and £1 million. And is the lead item in the Rory Gallagher collection, which will be auctioned at Bonhams on the 17th of October in New Bond Street in London. The collection consists of an exceptional selection of guitars, amps and accessories from his life and career offered by the Gallagher family. Rory's brother and former manager, Donal Gallagher, confirmed the auction was taking place since 1995. I've always felt that there was a mission to be fulfilled to cement Rory's legacy and further widen the knowledge of his music, said Donal. So there you have it. Okay, so if you've got a mill, and you might get it, you might get it for 750,000, maybe 800,000, but if you have it anyway, you could have that guitar, that battered guitar, as it's been described. And it's a beaut. It's very historic. I think even if I had a billion, I don't think there's anything like that that I would buy. I just don't get the lift from it, if you know what I mean. Some people might, but is that something that you'd love to have in your collection? Or if there's one item from any celebrity that you could have, other than their money and their skill and talent, what would it be? We're going to be talking history with Dr. Joe very shortly, by the way. It's 2024, and we're going to be talking about lots of stuff. In fact, we're going to be talking about Ballyshannon as well, quite coincidentally. So that's coming up. I know you all enjoy history with Dr. Joe. That'll be happening very, very soon. I might take the 1:45 ad a little bit early, and that frees us up for the full conversation, if that's okay. Greg, with regard to the Law Society of the Bar Council, I can tell you as a former president of the Bar Council once told me that you will get a hearing, but you certainly will not get justice. Okay. Again, I'm a little bit lost as to what that stuff is relating to. The penny will drop for me in a moment. A caller says parents need to take back control. I have a 12-year-old who's mad to get a phone. My outright answer is no, and will be until 18, which is bold. It's bold. It's tough. I respect you for what you're doing there. I've got no internet in the house, and my kids survive. Peer pressure is always going to be there, but parents have to take the decision regarding technology and explain it when their children are old enough to understand. Kids just don't need the headache of being exposed to that sort of thing. Let them be kids. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we'd all want, but it's tough. So this parent, the 12-year-old's looking to get a phone. They're saying, no, you're not getting a phone, and you won't be getting one until you're 18, and there's no internet in the house as well. As I say, that's admirable. Tough, but admirable nonetheless. All right, let's say Maggie and Y to Dr. Joe Kelly, a historian and author. Good morning, Joe. How are you getting on?
Maggie and Y, Greg, is Dr. Loch Bashtiachta. Good morning to yourself and all on Highland Radio.
Great to have you with us. 2024. We're going to jump back two centuries, though, because it's 200 years since the birth of famous Ballyshannon poet William Allingham, and then 100 years to 1924 when a Castlefin horse won the Aintree Grand National. All right, two important centenary milestones. Let's go back to poet William Allingham. Firstly and foremost, is it an opinion or a fact that Ballyshannon is the oldest town in the country?
Well, historically, if you go back to the Book of Invasions, Lord Gowl and the Héireann, it was there that it's believed that the first peoples came to Ireland and landed there. You know, you have the Inis Shamir, the island of Seymour there, that was named after the dog, so that was brought with them. So there is that belief in mythology, and certainly in our folklore, that Ballyshannon, yeah, is the oldest inhabited place in Ireland. That's according to the mythology and the Book of the Invasions of Ireland. So who am I to argue with that?
Yeah, and of course, you know, you've got Seymour Court, and you've got the Allingham Arms and other areas. I do wonder sometimes if enough is done, because I mean, I think it's might be difficult for Ballyshannon to compete commercially with Donegal Town. And also then Bundoran has its own sort of offering. And of course, there's an awful lot goes on in Ballyshannon between the Folk Festival, Rory Gallagher Festival and all that kind of stuff. But I wonder, is there enough mileage made for those maybe who like the history, those who visit areas for that side of stuff? As I say, I could be corrected by someone from Ballyshannon who says we work flat out at it, but I do wonder.
Ballyshannon has a very unique heritage. There's no doubt about that. And it crosses a lot of areas. I mean, you have the hydro station there. I mean, again, that's in the 40s. And you can go back, as I said, to the Book of Invasions.
Even the Donegal Democrat, the original paper, its history back there and all that. Even that's fascinating in and of itself.
Asarua, like even the place names are beautiful in Ballyshannon. Ass meaning waterfall, Irua, Red Hue. It's just fabulous. Just the place names. There's a lot of history with Ballyshannon, and it's the gateway into Donegal town and into the rest of our county.
So I presume Asaro is an anglicised is the Anglo version of Asarua.
Yes, As Irua. As is a waterfall. Yeah, As Irua. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And so that brings us to our topic today. We were talking about William Allingham. That's where he was born. He grew up in Ballyshannon and very much understood, you know, what it was that he was reared in the culture, the heritage, the history, and the people. That's very important to say that too. That there's kind of a uniqueness to the Bally. There's a subculture of people in Donegal.
It really is remarkable, the difference between people, say, for instance, from Donegal Town and Ballyshannon, or Ballyshannon and Killybegs, or even Ballyshannon and Bundoran to a slightly lesser extent, or Ballyshannon and Bleak for that matter. It is truly unique, and they've a unique sense of humour and everything else as well. But what would have William Allingham's life been like in Ballyshannon early on in his life, I wonder?
Well, you're talking 1824 when he was born, so you're going back 200 years. This would be the bicentenary. And look, I understand that the people in Ballyshannon, and there's the IT, and there's various different organisations and offerings there with William Allingham, and I'm sure they'll be doing something for the 200th anniversary. But he grew up in a village that was obviously a little bit smaller than it is now. And at the same time, it wasn't until later in his life when he was reminiscing in his book Rambles, he had two chapters in that book. In 1873, there was chapter 5 and chapter 6. And he describes what it was like growing up in Ballyshannon and his memory. But he lived in England in the latter part of his life, and he is always yearning and describing his memory, his youth, and his experience in Ballyshannon comes across in the poems. And maybe we'll read a few of the poems, or one or two, and I'll give you an idea of what it was like. But he was educated locally, and was sent to the local Ray School in Ballyshannon, and then moved to, was sent then to Killeshandra and Cavan for secondary education, but didn't stay there very long. He had to leave. And at the age of 14, he started to work in the Provincial Bank. His brother was there and his father previous to that. And he didn't want to do that, but that's nature. His mum died when he was 9. So he was the eldest of 5 children. So that's what he started working in the bank, but that wasn't his true calling. And then around 1846, he did the civil service exams and was appointed principal Coast Guard officer of customs in Donegal town, which was a very good position and a very well-paying position, £80 a year. But again, he obviously was drawn to literature and writing, and he went to London for a very brief period in 1854 to try journalism, but he didn't like it. So he returned back to back home to Ireland, first of all to Coleraine and then back to Ballyshannon, and he lived there until 1863 when he was appointed then to move to Leamington in Hampshire. And there's where he resided for the rest of his life.
And is that when he became most prolific in his output?
Yeah. I mean, how much time have you for all the writing he did? It's a phenomenal body of work.
So what age was that? Sorry, it's sometimes hard to... I'm doing subtracting as you're speaking. So at what stage then did he move to Britain long-term?
1863. So he would have been in his 40s.
Right, just
That was the age that he moved there. And he married a lady or a woman, Helen Patterson, in 1874. She was 25 years his junior. And they lived in Surrey, and they had two sons and a daughter. So that basically was his life. And while he was there, he wrote a sub-editor for a while of the Fraser magazine in London, and then later became the editor for 5 years until 1879. But he died then as in 1889, and his body was cremated and brought home to be buried in St. Anne's Church in Mullan the Shee. What another beautiful place name. Mullan means hill. You know, you have Mulla Duhin, Mulla Jerrig over in the Rosses, the Black Hill and the Red Hill, but Mulla means hill. And the Shiagi are the fairies, the hill of the fairies, so the graveyard. Wow. She is very, very interesting. And I mean, people would know, Donegal readers would know his famous poem, The Fairy, down the rushy glen, the fear of little men. That famous poem that we probably all would have learned, you know. We folk, good folk, trooping all together, green jacket, red cap, and white owl feather. A beautiful.
So up until his move to England, was any of his work being published? Was he taking writing seriously?
He obviously had a big body of work. He started his first volume of poems in 1850, so he was here when he wrote that. And then in 1854, Days and Night Songs. So he was publishing quite considerable amount of poems. And it was in 1864 then he wrote a very famous piece of literature. It was called Lawrence Bloomingfield in Ireland. And it was a long, long poem. It was a book, but it was just one poem. Wow. And it described the scenery of Ireland and society in Ireland, and particularly about the land war and the evictions and the conflict between the gentry and the tenants. So that's all described in that famous book or poem on 1864, Lawrence Bloomingfield in Ireland. And he in England, he got a lot of credit for that piece of work, actually, at the time. So he wrote other books, Rambles, 1873, the book called Rambles. Again, as I mentioned previously, he describes in quite good detail historical places and memories of his times in Ballyshannon. But probably most of the biggest insight you'll get to him is his book, The Diary. Or it's a collection of poems, but it was written after he died, posthumously. He had written it.
Published. It was published after he died.
Yes. Sorry, it was published after he died. You're correct. His wife, Helen, seen to it that it was published. And in that, you get a great insight into his life, what he was doing, who he was meeting, things like that there. And it gives it's a ramble. It's all over the shop, so to speak. It's just a survey of his life. And there's one lovely, in the chapter in Ballyshannon, he says, the little old town where I was born has a voice of its own, low, solemn, persistent humming through the air, day and night, summer and winter. And I presume that's the sound of the air and flowing. And that he heard that. But again, I don't know if that sound is still there in
Well, maybe he was talking to the uniqueness of the people of Ballyshannon too. We don't know, but that's great work. You can interpret it which way you want. So what kind of a life did he lead, though? Was he hobnobbing, or was he just living an ordinary life with incredible skills?
Well, it appears that he kind of did hobnob a little bit. Mm. Again, if we look at the diary that was published after his death, you see the kind of people he was mixing with, you know, Carlyle and Tennyson. The famous Tennyson was a good friend of his. And, you know, he wrote the poem, The Charge of the Light Brigade. It's a poem about the Crimea War back then. Look at how we've moved on in history with Putin and Crimea and all that comes round again. But the lovely line there is not the reason why, there's but to do and die. You know, we're not allowed to think, we just have to do and die. Again, have we come full circle? So these are the kind of people he was mixing with. And again, these were very significant artists and poets.
And how was he viewed amongst his peers then, considering the circles he was mixing in? I imagine you don't get into those circles unless you're held in high regard anyway to begin with.
Yeah, it would appear that what he tried to do, and Yeats understood this, William B. Yeats, again, more or less a neighbour down the road in Sligo. He subsequently wrote or published a book, 16 poems of Allingham's, took it and published it, I think around 1905, 1907. But Yeats at the time spoke about him being a person who kind of put Irish poetry and Irish literature, uniquely Irish, on the English platform, so to speak, through the English language. And remember, we were talking about the British Empire and all that at that time, and colonialism, and the idea of there was only one culture, as where Allingham brought a uniqueness of writing from his Irishness, you know, the idea of the fairies and his local place and place names, and the imagery that was very much local to Ireland, even though he was living in England. So Yeats spoke very, very highly of the poet of Ballyshannon, he called him. So yeah, he was fairly well respected. Look at, even to this day, like the bridge is named after him. There used to be the old bridge that was there in Ballyshannon, that was knocked down when they were doing the hydro scheme in the 1940s. There were 14 arches. And so now you only have the bridge. It's called the Allingham Bridge. And he wrote his own epitaph, and it's on the bridge. Here once he roved, a happy boy, along the winding banks of Erne, and now, please God, with finer joy, a nicer world his eyes discern. So that's on the bridge and on the way into...
Nice message. And yeah. is it true or is it not that some of his work was quoted in the Houses of Parliament?
Yes, Gladstone, who was the Prime Minister of England, yeah, very good. He was taken by some of his work, particularly what I was telling you about when he wrote the long poem, Lawrence Bloomfield in Ireland, and he talked about the evictions and the connection between the landlords and the tenants and that whole saga of Irish politics of the time, that he actually dipped into his book and took a quote from it and mentioned it in the Houses of Parliament at the time. So obviously people were aware of his works and what he had written and what he was doing. You could do a whole programme on Allingham. Probably deserves it. And it's oftentimes, you know, we appreciate others outside our county when we should actually be really, really appreciative on how fortunate we have been and are to have people like William Allingham among us. And who just wrote wonderful, wonderful literature and left so much for us as a heritage that we can all understand. And we've our common roots and common...
Yeah, but still to this day, often, Joe, and there's one or two notable examples, people still feel that they have to leave and become what they want to be and achieve what they want to be, and then hopefully maybe at some point return and get the appreciation they deserve from their own community. So everything changes and nothing changes at the same time. If you were to direct a person to two of his poems or two of his pieces, just to sort of say, right, I actually want to know or a little bit more about Mr. Allingham, could you recommend a couple?
Well, I'll do two verses of a famous poem, A Jew to Ballyshannon. It's The Winding Banks of Erne. It's a beautiful, beautiful poem. And it ties in what you had said about people having to go away and then come back. The last verse, well, just it's a long poem, but I'll just do the first and the last. And he calls it Ballyshanny, not Ballyshannon as we know today. Probably more authentic in relation to the Ballanchenny in Irish. A Jew to Ballyshannon, where I was bred and born, go where I may, I think of you, and sure as night and morn, the kindly spot, the friendly town, where everyone is known, and not a face in all the place, but partly seems my own. There's not a house or window, there's not a field or hill, but east or west in foreign land, I'll recollect them still. I leave my warm heart with you, though I'm forced to turn. So a Jew to Ballyshannon and the winding banks of Erne. And then the last verse ties in with what you were saying. If ever I'm a moneyed man, I mean, please God, to cast my golden anchor in that place where youthful years were past. Though heads that now are black and brown must meanwhile gather, new faces rise by every hearth and old ones drop away. Yet dearer still, that Irish hill that all the world beside, it's home, sweet home. Wherever I roam, through lands and water wide, and if the Lord allows me, I surely will return to my native Ballyshannon and the winding banks of Erne. Just beautiful. Brilliant.
Fantastic use of words. Did you know, I did not, that a Donegal horse named Master Robert won the Aintree Grand National? I would argue the most famous horse race in the world. 1924. Wow, what a story, Joe.
Yeah, like Aintree is worldwide known as probably one of the most famous races in the world. It's, 4 miles and 2.5 furlongs. It's a steeplechase with the famous 30 fences. And yeah, it was a horse from Castlefin, although the records put it down as being an English horse.
Well, that still happens to this day.
That happens. But and an English one. But look, we've had since, I think it's 1839 when it started, there's been numerous Irish ones. Maybe more recently, 2016, Rule the World. And probably everybody remembers a double 2018 and 2019 with Tiger Roll, that horse. And then you've had Red Rum and all these horses. But back in 1924, the 28th of March, this horse called Master Roberts from Castlefin, born and reared, bred there, won the Grand National against all odds, 25-1, and took the honours.
And it was a tougher race then than it is now as well.
I would imagine it was, with the way things have gone now, they've tried to make it a little bit more humane. And rightly so, but it was certainly a much tougher race back then. But we know factually that he was his owner was from Castlefin, and Robert.
And would the horse have been trained locally, Joe?
Well, it wasn't really when it wasn't. It's a long, long story.
I think the longer this story gets, the more tenuous the links to Castlefin might get. That's what your concern is here.
Yeah, I have to be careful because, believe it or not, Castlefin isn't just famous for that horse. And what a lot of people maybe don't know is Castlefin also has the honour, this little maybe sleepy town that we might think of, a little village here in Donegal, has the honour of having a gold Olympic medal. John Carr, who joined the USA 8 rowing team, won a gold medal in 1900 in Paris Olympics. So it's just a horse that Castlefin will be famous for. But what happened was he was a rather big foal and a very big horse, and he was sent to the Curragh. Remember the time of the war, World War One, horses were very, very important. Somewhere in the region of about 4 million horses died during World War One. People maybe don't realise how important horses were for that war. And the horse was sent to the Curragh to be trained. But the trainer there found, look, this horse is, it's too big and it's too awkward. And they sent it back to Castlefin to its owner, Robert McKinley, who also happened to be in the war as well. And what happened then, he was trained as an ordinary horse. They found that he wasn't doing a terrible lot, so they got him to plough. He was a good, strong horse to plough, and that's what he was used for.
So how did he end up in Aintree then, or at Aintree?
Well, what happened was then that they decided to sell him, and he didn't work as a chaser. They tried to sell him as a horse that would be, you know, a chaser. It didn't work as well. So they took him to a Mr. Anthony, and that didn't work in 1919. And so they decided, well, we'll sell him. And they sold him to a Mr. Elliot in Strabane for £50. And Mr. Elliot had bought him and had a field beside the train. We were talking previously about the train running from along Strabane. And lo and behold, didn't he not see the horse, Master Roberts, take fright, jump over the fences and run alongside the train for almost 2 miles. And he realised this horse had great potential.
Oh, that sounds too fabulous a story.
Yeah, there's a whole story to it. And so what he witnessed, he couldn't get over. So he decided this horse has potential. So he sold him on to a steeplechaser, sold him to a Mr. Lavery in Dungannon. And he tried training him. And then he sold him on to a Mr. Rogers in Rathoath in County Meath as a hunt horse. But finally then he sold him on to a Mr. Fordham in Hertfordshire in 1921. So now we find him in England. And just before the Aintree Grand National of 1924, he's bought by Mr. Major Sidney Green and Lord Argyle, and they train him up. And believe it or not, he was actually lame before the Aintree Grand National. Wow. And his jockey, the normal jockey, wouldn't ride him because of the lameness. So they had to get another jockey, Bob Turgill was his name. And he actually was to ride the horse, and wasn't he not in an accident the previous day on a race, and he had stitches and all the rest, but he was told by his doctor not to ride the horse, but he went in and he rode the horse, and he rode Master Roberts to victory.
25-1. So, I mean, obviously then the value of this horse skyrocketed, not necessarily perhaps, I don't know, I would imagine it's for siring and what have you that the value comes. You could probably trace that horse's ancestry to horses now, such as the records that are kept.
Well, he was sold, very good. He was sold for £50. So this is maybe the point you're making. And they reckon that he earned his owners then about £50,000 back then. So that was a colossal amount of money. And to think that, you know, the saying, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. And often we judge people and we box people. Imagine that horse had been just considered a plough horse and left to be a plough horse all its life. It would never have reached its potential. I mean, as a teacher, there's a lesson in that always for me, realizing what's sitting before me has so much potential.
And two just very brief questions. Is that our only connection with the Aintree Grand National? It seems remarkable if it were.
Yeah, no. There was another man from Down, Terry Casey. He died, unfortunately, at a very young age. He was in his 50s in 2001, but he actually trained Rough Quest, the National in 1996. And as far as I know, there's a golfing tournament down there in the Rosapenna that they have to honour him. He even had little cards, cards done on Master Roberts. So there was a lot of history there available. And if anybody's wanting to look any more about it, there's a man called Fran Murray doing a lot of research and hopefully a book on it. And it's on www.masterroberts.horse. And the whole story is there, pictures. And believe it or not, it was probably one of the first times it was televised but filmed.
Yeah, so that we actually have footage of Master Roberts.
Yeah.
Listen, you're a master historian, but unfortunately that's where we have to leave it. Time has caught up on us. Fantastic, fabulous as always, Dr. Joe. Intriguing. That's from 200 years ago. We had William Manningham, and 100 years ago, Master Roberts. All right, thanks so much, Joe. Take care. We'll be back with more after the news at 11.